Hello, I'm Julianne Good, and this is Psych 101. Welcome. We are here to make psychology more understandable and to give you tips and information to make your life easier. Tonight, I'm going to have a little political bend to psychology. My special guest is Ann Porter from Move to Amend, and as a national coalition. And I'm going to have her explain exactly what is Move to Amend, Ann.
Well, Move to Amend is a national coalition that works for a constitutional amendment that establishes that only human beings, not corporations or other artificially created entities, should be considered persons entitled to constitutional rights, that money is not a form of speech, and hence we should be able to regulate political contributions.
That sounds like a great organization that, and as we were speaking about before, there's several hundred members now, correct?
Yes, it's a broad-based coalition, and well, it should be, because corporations having constitutional rights, which they use to overturn the laws that we the people put in place to protect our communities and our environment, it's the taproot that so many ills in our societies.
Right, especially now. It seems like that is in the news almost every day now, what corporations are doing. Now, tonight we are going to hit upon how are corporations similar to psychopaths. And I was going to bring in the diagnostic manual, which just came out this year for psychology, but I forgot. But I like this definition from the Dictionary of Psychology, and they define a psychopath as a mental disorder roughly equivalent to antisocial personality disorder, but with emphasis on affective and interpersonal traits such as superficial charm, pathological lying, egocentricity, lack of remorse, and callousness. And we are definitely going to hit upon those traits tonight. Mm-hmm. So, what got you interested in researching how corporations and psychopaths are so similar?
Well, I got into Move to Amend after the 2000 election, when, to many people's surprise, George Bush was put in the White House. And I started really putting out my feelers to try and find out, you know, what was I not paying attention to? How could this have happened? And I happened to hear an interview with an author on another radio station. The book was defying corporations, defining democracy. Mm-hmm. And this is the book that was written by the group Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. And these the members of this group have a very legal background. In fact, some of them, I think, are repentant corporate lawyers. And they were studying the relationship between corporations having constitutional rights and the fact that despite so many groups trying to get civil rights action and environmental action, that all kept getting overturned. And these people and all the other members of the coalition, or at least the founding group, it was like a founding group of 20 somewhat, launched the Move to Amend campaign in the wake of the Citizens United decision, although they had been studying it for years before. And so I got active with them. I'm a member of one of the member organizations, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and it kind of grew from there. And one of the things that, although Move to Amend has a very legal focus, Move to Amend also recognizes that corporate rule depends on the existence of a class of throwaway people, expendable, disposable people who can be exploited and discarded with impunity. And this is very similar to what corporations do. And in this way, they are corporations are psychopathic-like. And so as an adjunct study of this, my own adjunct study, Move to Amend does not take a position on this, but I became interested in this, and I stumbled on a book by a market researcher named Clive Boddy, who has also, he's gotten some articles in Journal of Business Ethics, and he launched a book of his own in the wake of the 2008 financial crash. And in his book, Corporate Psychopaths, Organizational Destroyers, he lays out 8 characteristics of psychopaths. And he says, now he quotes from someone else, "Unless we are able to identify them, psychopaths will forever have power over us." And so being able to identify them is the first step in getting some control over this situation. So,
well, in that manner, Anne, it is maybe we can identify them and say, well, they're really egotistical, they're really full of themselves, they're power hungry. But, you know, what do we do? I mean, a lot of times these people are in positions of power. They are bosses or supervisors, managers, whatever. And we're caught in the middle. We're just, you know, low-lying employees, and, you know, we're in fear of possibly losing our jobs if we speak up to, you know, the higher powers that be, because maybe the higher powers that be are good friends with the with a psychopathic manager, correct?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Okay, well, the beginning of it and the beginning of starting to grow a culture that recognizes these people and will be willing to weed them out is the 8 characteristics. Shall I go through those now?
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit in between about each characteristic, because I found that list really fascinating when I was reading through it. Because it does go hand in hand, not only in corporate America, but also in private life. I mean, it was very similar, and it was really fascinating to read it. So can you start from the second characteristic then?
The second one? Okay. They can lie convincingly and bluff their way out of trouble if they are caught lying. Did I say they're glib and superficially charming?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Number three, they are manipulative and cunning and good at using people and seducing them. They have good political networking skills. Number four, they have a grandiose sense of their own self-worth. They downplay and blame others for their own personal problems and act as though they are above the rules. Number five, they display lack of remorse about injuring others, blame their victims, and have no shame about their ruthlessness in pursuing their own interests, no matter who they harm. Number six, they are emotionally shallow, cold, and cunning. They may say they care, but their walk does not match their talk. They display lack of empathy, and they show no capacity to relate to the feelings of others. They may ridicule and abuse people without scruple. And number eight, they refuse to accept responsibility for their behavior. Always have an excuse when things go wrong, blame others for problems, and claim credit for the good work that other people do.
Now, how many people have you known that fit this category?
Well, since there are 8 characteristics, it's kind of like a sliding scale. There are a few people who would be an absolute textbook case of these things. Mm-hmm. But if you know people who have like even 3 or 4 of these characteristics, those people can make your life very miserable. And yes, every once in a while you run into people who may have only one, and it causes you to pause. So as with most characteristics, you know, there's a range and there are shades of gray within it. So not all psychopaths are psychopathic in the exact same way.
Right. And they're so slick about hiding it sometimes. I mean, you know, unless they start getting caught in their lies and they start, you know, getting habitual about some of these behaviors, and then they get caught up in their own webs sometimes. I mean, it's fascinating to watch, actually, if you have somebody in position of power who can do this consistently. Now, I've had this happen in the workplace. I worked at a local hospital several years ago, and some of the people in the higher up positions definitely displayed these types of egotistical and psychopathic behaviors. It was very disturbing to see, especially within a hospital realm, that this would be happening, but there was no check system because, of course, they had their little friendships on the top there. So weeding people out was really difficult, even though, you know, a lot of employees were talking about, you know, certain managers doing this sort of behavior and not being reprimanded for it. Mm-hmm. Very difficult. I would like to reach out to the listeners if you would like to join Ann Porter and myself in speaking about psychopaths and corporations. If you have something to vent about, the number is 800-893-9562. Again, that's 800-893-9562. So now, talk a little bit about the research that you did about Clive Boddy and what really got you interested in this.
Well, I happened to hear about Clive Boddy and his book, and I got the book and I read it. I think I saw it in Changelinks. It's a local paper here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So I think I first heard of Clive Boddy in Changelinks, but I had certainly sensed a connection, and I've had my own experiences in the workplace with psychopathic people who I felt were psychopathic supervisors too. And I should say that it's estimated that psychopaths make up as much as 4% of the population, so they're not rare. We run into them, you know, here, there, and along the way. So I think it's really worthwhile for people to be aware and be conscious of the ways that we can recognize them, mm-hmm. and start building a core of society that can recognize them and say, no, we don't want this.
Okay.
So,
and what are some of those signs about recognizing psychopathic managers, supervisors, CEOs, CFOs? I mean, you know, the corporation world is full of these people, and sometimes they're just getting away with literally breaking the law, not really looking at the big picture of how their decisions, sometimes very selfish, are affecting the people below them.
Okay, well, shall I talk about the characteristics of workplaces with psychopathic supervision styles?
That would be interesting, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, they're characterized by interpersonal conflict, bullying, driving wedges between groups of people to keep them at each other's throats, and unfair supervision. Psychopaths enjoy hurting people for their own entertainment. They cause confusion, chaos, and fear to hide their other activities. There are a lot of organizational constraints in these kinds of workplaces. There are rigid hierarchies and complex, burdensome procedures which immobilize people and hinder smooth work functioning. There's heavy, unrealistic workload, inadequate and unsafe equipment for workers to use, and breakdown in communication, adding to chaos and confusion and low levels of job satisfaction.
Yeah, I would definitely, yeah, when I was reading that through initially, I mean, how many organizations are running like this now just because of the economic situation that we're in right now? And they're taking advantage of their employees. And it all boils down to, you know, employee abuse, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially like the low levels of job satisfaction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, a lot of your listeners are, you know, thinking, okay, I do recognize this, and, you know, I am experiencing this. And so I hope that I'm, you know, striking some or resonating with some chords there.
Yeah, definitely. And I hope too that just listening to this might plant that seed of, okay, I shouldn't take this kind of workplace abuse. Yes, I want to have a job, but on the other hand, I want to be treated humanely at my workplace. So what would you recommend to a person that's in that position?
Well, this is something that we have not talked about very much in society here. There are a lot of taboos about it. There's a very low level, at least right now, of consciousness about it. I think the mainstream media blasts people with all kinds of messages that these psychopathic leadership styles are the norm and the ideal and should be accepted and should in fact even be admired and esteemed. So let's see, I have a list of sort of tips for weeding out psychopaths. Should we talk about that now?
Well, yeah, actually, we'll talk about that in the second half of show.
And
we'll touch upon that. That's okay.
Okay.
You know, and when I was reading through this all, actually, I was thinking about the recent movie that was so popular, The Wolf of Wall Street. Did you see that movie?
I didn't. I'm sorry.
Okay.
No.
With this, anybody that hasn't seen the movie, I highly recommend it just because it, to me, I thought it was a really good movie. But the whole situation is it kind of put Leonardo DiCaprio into that position of you should admire this person. And he was definitely a corporate psychopath.
Mm.
He didn't care who he hurt along the way. But, you know, he had all the, you know, fame and fortune and everything else that came along with it. But, you know, it didn't really show him paying much of a price for what he had done, you know, financially and personally to people along the way. So I definitely recommend that movie for a reference point. If you want to, you know, it was definitely Hollywood glamorized though. So,
Okay. So
you know, what do you do if you're in that position? I mean, I think a lot of us are kind of brainwashed that we somehow admire these people because they put on a good show. That's what it kind of boils down to, right? They put on a good show. They are flamboyant and they're, you know, they just want to wrap you up in their ego, basically. All right.
Certainly. Yeah. Well, it's not something that one person could possibly take on, I think. I think it's going to require building a large group of people whose consciousness has been raised about this. Let's see. And it's hard. I think one of the points is it's difficult for people to even imagine this. And there's another book. It's by Martha Stout. She is a psychoanalyst, and she calls her book The Sociopath Next Door. And Martha Stout uses the word sociopath. She uses it to refer to what Clive Boddy refers to as a psychopath. And shall I talk now about how hard it is, or the passage in her book?
You can bring it. Sure. Yeah. Let's hear that passage before we break for commercial.
Okay. Imagine not having a conscience, no feelings or guilt, or remorse, no matter what you do, no limiting sense of concern for the well-being of strangers, friends, or even family members. Imagine no struggles with shame, no matter what kind of lazy, selfish, harmful, or immoral action you have taken. The concept of responsibility is unknown to you, except as a burden that others seem to accept without question, like gullible fools. Now, add to this strange fantasy the ability to conceal from other people that your psychological makeup is radically different from theirs. Since everyone assumes the conscience is universal, hiding the fact that you are conscience-free is nearly effortless. You are never confronted by others for your cold-bloodedness. Your reality is so completely outside the personal experience of everyone else that they almost never guess at your condition.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah. So people should not beat themselves up over not being able to recognize psychopaths. It's hard. It doesn't come naturally for, you know, the other 96% of us.
Right. Exactly. And we'll talk more about that after we take a musical break here. But I'd like the listeners to know that if you would like to come see me for counseling sessions, I now have an office in Cerritos, California, and you can contact me at 562-234-4650 or email me at jgood8@verizon.net, and I will get back to you within 24 hours of receiving your message. And we're going to break right now. With Psych One-on-One with Julie Ann Good and Ann Porter, and we're talking about corporate psychopaths. Now, before the break, we were talking about a little bit about how to weed out psychopaths within the workplace. Can you go through that a little bit, please, Ann?
Okay, well, the first step is to learn to identify them, and those were the 8 characteristics mentioned earlier. Another technique is to monitor the unethical decisions and choices made by those put in authority, and keeping a log of these incidences is a very useful thing. This is an area where psychopaths are prone to display observable maladaptive behaviors. They start off, typically psychopaths will start off being dazzling and brilliant, but little by little they get down to the business of parasitizing the people around them. And it's important with psychopaths to take time to get to know people, because psychopaths typically do not stand the test of time. Make it a habit and a norm to take care in all dealings with people in the workplace, and create a non-impersonal climate where, quote, quirkiness would not slip by unnoticed.
And what do you mean by the quirkiness factors?
The psychopathic the psychopathic traits. Because psychopaths thrive in conditions, and Clive Boddy talks about this in his articles. He says that, you know, there's been a proliferation of these psychopathic leaders, especially since the 1970s, because so many workplaces have become so transient. It used to be much more the norm for people to have one job in one place with one set of coworkers for decades, if not one's entire working life.
Right.
And so this is the kind of atmosphere they thrive in. And so to make it personable in that sort of way, that the norm is that everybody knows each other much better and people have known each other over time. Mm-hmm. And if we can get back to cultivating workplaces in ways they're more community-like, and people stay longer.
Yeah, that would be nice. That, you know, something in old-fashioned sort of workplace where you really know your coworkers, you really know your bosses, at least maybe like about 75% of them. You know, I mean, I obviously not everybody's going to know everybody really well 100% of the way, but that would be nice to be able to get back to that kind of security base for most people. I think we're really missing that in this country the last 10 to 20 years.
Yeah,
I see this happening with younger people that I know. Mm-hmm. That, you know, if you're in one workplace for 5 years, that's a long time.
Oh my goodness, yes.
It is, because that is the trend, is that you change jobs at least once every 5 years, if not careers altogether. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're right. The transiency of our employee base, our workspaces now is just, it's almost non-existent. So, yeah, so.
Right, yeah.
We
need more community-ness in our work areas.
Yes.
So, okay. Put more emphasis on references and a track record that shows genuine caring for the well-being of people in one's sphere of influence for applicants for employment and promotion, and de-emphasize the interview process in which the glib, dazzling psychopath shines. Be sure that there is adequate thorough training for positions of authority. A psychopath will clamor to get into a position of authority even though he is unqualified for it, he or she is unqualified for it, whereas a person of conscience will decline such a position if he or she feels unqualified to fill it.
They can definitely BS their way through through interview process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've definitely been, I'm both sides of the interview process, and I've just seen some people you could tell it was like, it was personality A and personality B until you threw him a question. And then all of a sudden it threw them off track. And then you could really see where their personality was going and where, you know, how effective they would be as an employee.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's good to kind of get into that process and throw those mudslingers at them every once in a while, question-wise, kind of throw them off track, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. If you know how to construct a mudslinger question, that's fabulous.
Throw them off track a little bit, right? Instead of getting the same interview questions thrown at them all the time,
uh-huh.
Right? Exactly.
And speaking as one who, I'm 60 now, and I can remember when I was much younger that references were so much more valued, and now there's all these very strict rules about all these things that you can't say if somebody calls for a reference about a former employee.
Mm-hmm.
So this is I think the psychopathic element at work to a point. I think in some cases it's important to we have to have some protections for people, but still, I think we need to value reputations and value the building of reputations.
Mm-hmm.
And value people who try to build good reputations. And okay, another characteristic or another technique is to value confidence based on competence rather than on attitude. An attitude has been so much touted these last several years. Share leadership. This creates an undesirable climate for psychopaths who enjoy being able to play God with other people's lives. And Body also suggests that companies should conduct formal ethical reviews of business plans before implementing them, including both consumers and company executives on the reviewing team.
That would be lovely. I would like to see that. I would like to see like some of the valued employees versus just the managers and supervisors that are in on this position, because they're the ones that are going to be affected the most mm-hmm. by, you know, mishiring. Mm-hmm. So I think they definitely should be on there. Now, one of the things that I pull up too from the Body thing is this checklist by a professor, Robert Hare.
Mm.
And he developed what was called a psychopathy checklist for use in clinical psychiatry and psychology. And it's a 360 question battery of you know.
Oh, did you get the whole thing out? Okay.
I did not get the whole thing, but it sounds fascinating. It's called the Business Scan 360. And I hope that they're using something like this. And running people through a battery of tests before they get into a position of power. You know, it was funny. Over the holiday season, I was going to just work a temporary job just to get me through after I graduated. And I applied at Macy's. I went to the HR department. They had an approximately 200 question test that was rated from I really think this about something neutral, or I, you know, highly agree, neutral, or highly disagree. Over 200 questions, mind you, for a temporary position.
Mm-hmm.
It appalled me. I'm thinking, okay, really, you got to run me through a personality test for a $9 an hour job.
Mm-hmm. It's been misplaced. It's the people in the high level positions that just sort of get in on a wink and a nod, and it's the people in the lower level positions that get grilled.
Yeah, you know. It's like, what's up with that?
I know. Yeah. You hear about doctors and professionals being allowed to operate with no provision for making sure that they're sober and everything, and
or not sleep deprived,
and or yeah, that too.
That's highly uh-huh. common in the profession, is sleep
right.
deprivation.
Yeah. So, it seems like, you know, the more responsible, and the more sensitive the job is, the less people are, you know, checked out before they get started. Whereas, people who are doing like the really tedious jobs, the really low level stuff, you know, they're the ones who have to submit urine samples every time they come to work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we've got that upside down, or at least, you know, there should be, some equity in there.
Right. And I think the thing that disturbs me too during the hiring process is that they can run a credit check on you. Mm-hmm. Like that is going to be a telltale sign. Well, if it's going to be a telltale sign of whether or not you're going to be a good employee or not, I can see that if you're working within finances or, you know, anything that has to do with, any kind of money transaction whatsoever. But just for a, you know, like you said, a low-lying job and stuff, they can run your credit check. I think that's a little too private.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Yeah. Well, another point that Body makes is that there are some lines of work that have a higher rate of psychopaths than others. Let's see. Okay. The lowest level grouping with, you know, the least amount of psychopaths in there includes retail, accommodation, wholesale, transport. And these are, you know, like really tangible things. If you are selling, you know, stoves and the stove doesn't work, you get a reality check real quick. Okay, the next grouping includes agriculture, forestry, fishing, mining, construction, and manufacturing. The third of these five groups includes health, culture, property, and business services. The second highest is government, defense, education, electricity, gas, and water. And the very highest is finance, banking, and communication.
There you go.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So now, is it reasonable or possible to hold psychopaths responsible for their unethical decisions and actions?
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, Body brings out that there's the argument in favor of doing so is that psychopaths understand rationally what they are doing and therefore can be held accountable. The argument against is that psychopaths did not choose to be psychopaths, and research shows that psychopathy is partly learned and partly hereditary, or at least research indicates. That's still a very gray area, and both Body and Martha Stout comment on that in their books. And legally, psychopaths do not qualify for a definition of insanity or for a defense of insanity, although there are a few people who are both insane and psychopathic. And then there's public opinion. Mm-hmm. Some people would say yes, some people would say no. And Martha Stout makes the point that in other cultures, there is less psychopathy exhibited, at least. Here in the U.S., we're about the highest, and we are maybe 4% of observable psychopathy, mm-hmm. Are people with observable psychopathic traits. In Asian societies or societies that have a strong Buddhist ethic for the national culture, the figure is like 0.0 something. So, you know, a few hundredths, maybe a few tenths of a percent, as opposed to us with 4 percentile marks.
Well, wouldn't you say that's kind of part of the American flamboyance anyways? Mm-hmm. Of that, you know, it's dog eat dog and I'm going to rise to the top no matter what. And I mean, it's really kind of part of our culture and it's heralded. Uh-huh. As this is what you want to rise to. For some people, they really clamor on to that. And they say, this is the way I want to live. I want to be rich and I want to be famous and I don't care who I hurt along the way.
Right.
You know, like you said, it's partly hereditary and it's partly cultural.
Yeah, well, it's that, it's sort of the, it's the shadowy side of that land of opportunity idea. You can take advantage of opportunity if you are willing to, and not squeamish about, you know, hurting people. So,
but you do pay a price no matter what, whether it's legally or karmically, you pay a price somewhere along the line. You know, you just look at some people like, how can they get away with whatever they're doing and stuff? But, you know, I think sooner or later people do pay for the wrongdoing. At least I hope so. I mean, obviously there's a lot of people that are getting away with it, but I think sooner or later something happens just to at least divert that process from happening.
Well, I would think that, you know, certainly after a point, we have people are going to get a reputation and they're going to be ostracized. You know, look at how so many of our leaders require bodyguards. The norm is that, you know, you have a bodyguard during your term of office and then you have a bodyguard for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that doesn't sound very free and embracing of the world to me.
No, it doesn't.
I don't think I would wish for that.
No,
I wouldn't want to to live that way myself.
Right. And the high level of responsibility that the leaders have to put up with too. I mean, it's just incredible. I wouldn't want to do that either. Mm. I kind of like being able to go my own way every day. So, to what extent does the public have a right to be protected from psychopaths, even if it means incarcerating them?
Well, that's a question for people to ponder. I think, well, at least Body brings out that most people would agree that we should be, that people should be protected from psychopaths, and they might have qualms about restricting psychopaths, but I think once a track record is established, people would have less problems with sanctioning psychopaths if once they start doing things. But it's like, you know, how many people have to be killed at an intersection before you put in a stoplight? Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of our ethic. That
it's a numbers game. So are there any non-punitive ways to restrain psychopaths that would meet society's criteria for humane treatment? That's a heavy question.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. The only thing that comes to mind is like the way meddlesome family members were treated in the opium wars. Just, that's like drugging them. Keep them out of people's hair.
I think that would be impossible in our country.
It's like I brought these questions out. I don't necessarily have answers for them, but I hope that people will think about them. And Body says that there are issues with restraining psychopaths or restricting them from being in positions of authority or in any position where they can do injury to other people. And then there are issues with not restricting them. There's issues either way. And I think, it's like we as a society need to sort of like be conscious of, where we draw the line and where we, how we call the shots on people like this. And it's not even just in high level positions. I think, we can start with kids in school. It's like who deserves to be the monitor?
Right. Question authority.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I like that one. What is that, mm-hmm. from the 70s, I believe? Question authority. That was pretty strong during that era.
Right.
And we do need to question who are in positions of power. And I think also that corporations need to be responsible about trying to weed out psychopaths, and trying to, maybe... do the battery of testing with them. Mm-hmm. Be responsible towards the company, the employees, the shareholders, and look at the whole realm of what they're trying to accomplish as a corporation, and then put those kind of fail safes into place. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would see it that way. And I think, just by talking about it here, I hope we can plant the seed that will grow to be a culture of people that expect this from, all workplaces. In recent times, corporations have grown to be, for profit only. In fact, it started back in 1916 in the case of Henry Ford. I think it was the Dodge brothers, who once worked for Henry Ford and his car company, and they were his biggest stockholders. And at one point, Henry Ford was thinking that he wanted to take the profits that he made and put them into making cars cheaper and paying his workers more. But the Dodge brothers took Ford to court and said Ford should be using those profits to pay us a higher dividend as his stockholders. And the court decided in favor of the Dodge brothers and also sort of made it, set a precedent that paying the stockholders the highest possible dividend should be the highest priority of the corporation above all else, including worker safety, product safety, the whole ball of wax. So that's kind of where we. That's one of the ways that we got there.
Yeah, 100 years ago.
Yeah.
We're still struggling.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the morals of this show is if you are having workplace issues with one of your superiors, you should probably go to the human resources department, see how you can file a complaint or see how you can resolve the issue and report that person. And maybe there's other people who have also had problems with that superior. And make your voice be known. I mean, you really have that right as an employee in the United States of, you know, letting your voice be heard, knowing that there are workplace issues that maybe a lot of people are just burying their heads, closing their eyes, and just pretending that it's going to go away, it's going to get better. Most of the times that won't happen. You need to voice and you need to, you know, see what the, you know, see what rights you have to making that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, eventually you could be, you know, you could be making the workplace a better place, period, by just standing up and saying something. And if somebody else is having problems, then encouraging that other person or people to go and do the same thing.
Sure, yeah. And especially the more community people build around this, I think, you know, one of the things that Buddy says or points out is that in this country especially, the law views people as autonomous moral beings with an individual responsibility. Psychologists feel that people are a lot less free to act independently. It takes an enormous amount of strength to stand up to these people, and I think it's really critical to build communities of people who know that they have each other's support in this.
Yeah, that is so important. Otherwise,
yeah,
Everybody's just, like you said, divided, standing by themselves, suffering, taking it home, maybe taking it out on their family or friends or loved ones. And it's such a vicious circle.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, and it's, you know, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I had lived through that situation and it was a long, drawn out process. And now that I'm gone from that corporation, I couldn't be happier. And I never want to go back and work for another corporation again. That's all I can say. I'm not cutting down all corporations, but the one I work for was just so dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that it was getting worse. So yes, it's good to have that freedom. It is good to have the self-esteem back of knowing that you don't have to suffer going to work every day. Workplace bullies is what it boils down to.
Mm-hmm.
Egotistical, power-driven, and they're basically getting off on kind of torturing their employees. It's sad, but it's true.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
So what do you think that we can basically do then for, you know, getting this whole psychopath in the corporation thing on hold, besides, you know, besides filing complaints and making her voice heard? Is there anything else you can recommend, Anne?
I would ask that everyone check out movetoamend.org, because Move to Amend is working to create a situation where we have a lot more say about what corporations can and cannot do. Right now, they basically write the laws for themselves. And if they were stripped of their constitutional rights, we the people could design them much better. Chief Justice John Marshall said back in the early 1800s, a corporation is nothing more and nothing less than what its charter of incorporation makes it. And the charter of incorporation is basically a description written up by the states. It's a legal document that spells out exactly what a corporation can do and cannot do. These were much more strictly written back in this country's earlier years, but little bit by little bit, corporations slipped out of these constraints. So this is one thing. And I would suggest that people read Clive Boddy's book. He spells his name, his first name is Clive, C-L-I-V-E. His last name is Boddy, B-O-D-D-Y. His book is called Corporate Psychopaths, Organizational Destroyers. And he's also written some articles that people can find online. And another book I would recommend people read is The Sociopath Next Door by Martha Stout, S-T-O-U-T.
Yeah, those sound like very interesting books. And just the research that I looked up for Boddy was spot on, I thought. And it was easy to read.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't too difficult. And I think a lot of people could, you know, read through this and shake their heads like, yes, I know bosses like this. I've lived through this.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's like, this is my life.
Exactly.
No, I certainly felt that way when I was reading it.
Yeah, most definitely. So, and if anybody would like to contact you, what is your number, Anne?
Okay, I don't have email, but I have a phone number. It's 323-255-1279. And people can also see that if you go to movetoamend.org and you click on the affiliate pages or the local groups in each different city, and you go into the one for Los Angeles, my number is also there.
Okay, terrific. That's really good information. Sounds like a great organization. And again, make your voices be known. Do not suffer in silence. Speak up about workplace abuse. It is so important to everybody around you, because you figure, how many hours a week do you spend at work? Why go there and suffer? That's not the way it was meant to be. So Anne Porter, thank you so much. You are very informative about this subject, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me on your show. And I do want to put a shout out to Melvin Ishmael Johnson,
yes,
the show host of the Kumon Report, because he first asked me to come on his show and talk about the corporation as a psychopath, and to, you know, draw the connections between corporations and psychopaths. So thank you, Melvin.
Yes, thank you, Melvin. And Melvin's show is on right after mine, the Qumran Report. And we love Melvin, love the show, so definitely stay tuned for that. And I would like to end the show again with letting you know that I have a counseling office in Cerritos, California. That number again is 562-234-4650. My email is jgoode8@verizon.net. Send me an email. Give me a call. I would love to hear from you. I would love to hear about show ideas and any comments or questions you may have. Reach out, okay? I really appreciate you tuning into Psych One-on-One. This is Julianne Good. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Bye now.